Bebu asks, the government claims it is the TPLF who cut communication. Do you have any evidence when you say the government caused communication blackout? And as you answer that, Rashid, I think there's another question also for you that's not on the Q&A, that is asking if there's a danger of regional destabilization because of the conflict in Ethiopia. Of course, now with movement of displaced people or refugees going into Sudan, South Sudan, and maybe Ethiopia withdrawing their troops from Onsom, is this conflict going to have much wider regional destabilizing effects? Rashid.
Yes, thank you very much, Pauline. I think the question about the cuts in communication sounds to me like a frivolous question because it is the government that controls the infrastructure. It is the government that routinely cuts off mobile telephones, cuts off the internet, and everything else whenever there is a crisis. And this is not the first time. So the idea that it is the TPLF that has done that probably is not entirely correct. There could be, I think, possibility that the regional government had its own, I think, sort of input into that structure. But I think Ethiopia is a very centralized state and communication is very centralized. So, you know, unless it is Addis that has cut it, there's no way in which, you know, you will have a regional government cut its own internet. And, you know, it is a very centralized, I think, system. And I'm not competent in this field. I will probably, you know, not dwell too much on it. But I think that this is definitely something which the state intended. And I think you can see the impact. The impact has been horrendous, you know, because I am now in my 50s and I've never seen a conflict which has been fought for 4 weeks without any report, without any footage. And that is remarkable. I think what Ethiopia has achieved may be a template for all future wars that dictators will fight everywhere, you know, how to impose a total, complete blackout. Coming to the second question about the wider impact, there's no doubt in my mind that this war is going to be extremely destabilizing for a number of reasons, because Tigray straddles basically two frontiers. This is Sudan, but also Eritrea. And in many ways, the war today, you know, there is a lot of others deciding to go against a rebel state. Eritrea is deeply involved in this conflict. And the longer it continues to drag on, the greater the possibility of actually this war sucking in other regional actors as well. Now, Western Tigray borders a region of Sudan, which is called Kassala, and down Gedarif. These are two regions that are extremely unstable in Sudan. Essentially no man's land in many ways, where the state does not have, you know, presence, where also historically there have been conflicts between ethnic communities, but also a lot of other criminal syndicates, you know, gun running, people smuggling. So it is a very difficult terrain for the governments to control. And, you know, my sense is that if this war drags, it will actually expand to Sudan. But what worries me a lot is not just the outward expansion of this conflict, but the inward expansion of this conflict. Ethiopia is a vast country, and it has a lot of discontents. It has a lot of ethnic fragmentations. And although the prime minister may sound a bit triumphalist at the moment and appear to have vanquished a historical foe, I think no one doubts that this is a very fragile state, largely reliant on a very small support base. So if this war, I think, escalates, there's a very greater chance it may actually extend to other ethnic communities. But I think what is extremely worrying for me, apart from everything else, is the possibility of this war actually developing into some kind of genocide. And I use this word carefully. I don't want to sound alarmist, but there is growing ethnic profiling of Tigrayans. There are already mass killings. We saw a nasty incident at the start of the war in Maikadra. And so ethnic tensions are extremely high. And if you don't have a robust government that comes in and basically puts a stop to this, and a government that encourages this kind of ethnic profiling, where Tigrayans are actually expelled from work, they are stopped from traveling, they basically get letters saying they should not report for work. We don't know the exact number, but hundreds of them. There is a lot of anecdotal evidence that is mounting to an extent where there was a BBC report last evening, which actually quoted one Western diplomat as saying there is a smell of Rwanda. You know, so I think we must not be complacent. Rwanda did not drop from Mars. You know, it is part of the habitat. It is part of the terrain. There's nothing special about Ethiopia. It is a country that has had historical inequities and now deeply fragmented, and the ethnic tensions are very high. So I think unless you have a government that basically stands up and looks at these growing dynamics and stops it, then the risk, I think, is very high. I think this war also needs some real action from Africans. And there's generally a deference to Ethiopia because it is the headquarters of the African Union. But I think because of that status itself, I think Africa should pay a lot of attention to Ethiopia, put a lot of pressure on these parties to come round and find a political settlement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rashid, for that comprehensive answer. But I think there's still a bit of debate, I guess, in the group about who cut off the communication. There's another question here for Kibreb, and it says, Kibreb, the deep state is still here in different shapes and forms, even after the removal of TPLF. After the reform being in quotation marks, there was space for civil society to operate and bring diverse views, but civil society was largely absent. Why? I'm afraid we'll be speaking of the same thing even after certain years. So Kibreb, over to you, that even though the deep state is there and there's room for reform, it seems like civil society is still absent.
Before I answer that question, I want to provide comment on Rashid's response with regards to power, phone, and maybe Eritrea's intervention as well. I mean, some of the things when he answered, he was assuming facts. And when we speak about a nation with 100 million people, assumption, I don't think is a right way of responding to that. So I think there are two sides of allegations. One, the federal government claims that in order to attack its, you know, the federal army, the TPLF itself cut power and telecommunication and all other means of communication. So there is this side of the story, and also the TPLF claims that it's the government. But at the end of the day, Ethiopia do have different substations with regards to power. So of course, to disconnect power, there is no need for the central intervention. Rather, in the region itself, disconnection could be made. So still, it's going to be fact disputes, different wordings, but at the end of the day, from Rashid's point, I have seen significant assumption. I don't think that's a correct way of doing it. But with regards to the deep state, actually, the old guards of the previous administration were still operating, and there were, as I said earlier, there were 113 conflicts all over the country, which had ethnic and religious resemblance. And during these processes, there are some signs of financing whereby youth would be paid to go out and attack. And there were some information related with actually youth who were caught with having cash received to do things that happened in the country. So that's why I'm saying that when you see the problem and discuss about the problem, it's more deeper than what people are seeing from the outside. The major advocate of ethnic federalism and ethnic politics is actually the TPLF. So a party, and if a team is organized in a form of ethnic basis, then at the end, if there is an alleged crime that is done by group members of that party, of course, when you arrest, for sure, if you are going to arrest 10 people, all 10 of them are going to have the same ethnic background. It's obvious that that's going to happen. So, I mean, the ethnic profiling issue is popping up because political parties are organized in a form of ethnic groups. And when you get assignment in the federal and regional administrations, still, your ethnic background is seen. So at the end, when you go and try to apprehend people, of course, they are going to be from a certain ethnic group. That's right. So that's the downfall, or that's the effect, or the negative effects of ethnic federalism. Because, you know, when you see TPLF, it's Tigray Liberation Front. There is another party which is with the Oromos. There is another party with the Somalis. So this is what has happened in the country. And if you say that there has been a wrongdoing by certain members of that specific party, of course, you are going to apprehend or imprison members of that ethnic group. So that's the issue, and which needs to be seen. With regards to the deep state matter, actually, these previous officials, who were aggrieved and who were unhappy by the reform. Significant portion of them went to Tigray region, and then they were settling there. And they were preaching on a daily basis that Tigray people and TPLF are the same. And there were different parties who were saying that this is a very wrongful argument that's being portrayed, which is, you know, TPLF is a one party and there are other opposition parties operating from that region. But still, TPLF was advocating that, you know, TPLF and Tigray people are the same. So that was one wrongful thing that has been happening over the last 2 years. So in the deep state aspect, actually, this corruption chain in the country was actually financing conflicts all over the country. There are different evidences that could be tracked, and there are use that has been used for this purpose. So that group wanted, especially the small group within TPLF, was trying to prove that Tigray is a very peaceful island while the other part of the country is in conflict. So that was the message which wanted to be portrayed, which was really wrong, because at the end, you know, this type of conflict happened specifically in Tigray area. All in all, what I can say is, in order for countries to be safe and for the rule of law to materialize and have flesh, there should be a strong government without an actor of a deep state. So that needs to happen, and that will be a solution. And with regards to intervention, actually, the way I see it, the action from group members of TPLF has shaken the state, not the government. It has shaken the state. And now the state is trying to protect its peace, security, and sovereignty. So the way I see it, it's almost over, and now Ethiopia has stabilized itself. There could be insurgent actions that might happen in the country, but at the end, it's going to be over very soon. That's what I see and understand. One point with regards to protection of civilians, I 100% agree with that. And with regards to humanitarian corridors, I 100% concur with that idea. So immediate opening towards humanitarian corridors need to happen right away. And protection of civilians, it's nothing to discuss about. I mean, it's very much important, and the government needs to respect those things.
Thank you, Kibrep. I think there's a follow-up question on that, but I just want to ask a question to Rita, but also a follow-up question that maybe we should be thinking about, which are quite similar. Somebody says, PMRB is a former army intelligence officer and a long-term cadre of the EPRDF. Why is the notion of deep state limited to TPLF? And I think that's also the same question that is being asked about. It is not only TPLF that was part of the deep state or the corruption, and members of other groups also being arrested. There's a question that I want to pose to you, Rita. Judy asks, both you and Rashid have talked about the positions of the Coptic and Catholic churches in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Are Protestant churches taking any position in the situation in Tigray?
The Protestant churches have not issued a public statement yet. However, this does not mean that they are not working with their communities or within their communities and within the structure of their communities and their congregations towards a kind of peace-building exercise. They are very concerned about some of the fragmentation that Rashid mentioned, even within their own congregations. So they are very focused also on mending some of that. So they haven't issued a public statement, but this does not mean that they're not actually working or doing work at the grassroots level with their congregations on issues of peace building.
Thank you, Rita. Rashida, I know you want to answer Kibrib's comments and other comments, but I'd like to pose this question to you. Much of the TPLF's current top leadership is probably too old to go back to the bush and fight a new insurgency inside Ethiopia. So much will depend on the intentions of the next generation of the TPLF leadership. Do they intend to fight or to return to politics under a new banner and contest the elections in 2021?
Thank you very much, Pauline. And also my thanks to the colleagues for their submissions. I just want to just stress again the point which I made, which is that the idea of ethnic profiling is very bad. Even if you have legitimate security concerns, I think that is how serious violence against specific communities happen. And I think the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission itself, headed by Daniel Bekele, has actually expressed concern. So this is not, I think, the way my brother Kebreab is trying to downplay it. This is a very serious matter. And I think I can't stress enough how concerning it is. And if it continues, I think in this trend, without the Prime Minister coming out very openly and clearly putting a stop to it, then I think there is no doubt in my mind that Ethiopia is headed for serious violence ahead. We shouldn't downplay it. I would love to believe that everything is over and perfect. This war has been wrapped up. Unfortunately, history tells us that wars are not like taps where you turn them on and then you turn it off. Wars generate a dynamic of their own. You know, they leave toxic legacies. This is going to be a very long, drawn-out process. I wish this war had not taken place, but now that we are in it, how do we stop it? And I think the onus is, first of all, on Prime Minister Abiy and his government. Do they want to stabilize Tigray? If they want to stabilize Tigray, then they need to take the political action now. I can't see how this war can be resolved without at least some form of negotiations with Tigray, the civil society involvement, and even the insurgency itself. Ultimately, the same people you criminalize and you want to take to court will be the same people you'll have to sit face to face with and negotiate peace with. They are the people who have the arms. They are the people who can complicate life for the federal government. So I think we should try to look at it from that perspective. Again, I dispute the entire thesis of Kebreab, which is that there is a deep state which the TPLF was part of. I think if you look at the idea of a deep, Ethiopia was an imperial state, centuries old, and has developed a certain ethos and a certain culture and tradition. So this is a very strong state fundamentally. And now historically, it has been controlled and governed by Highlanders, in particular the Amhara, but also at some point by the Tigrayans. But it has largely throughout its imperial history been led by the Amhara. And we have seen how the Amhara have become today the most strident, belligerent party, which is pushing Abiy to go through war with Tigray. And I would even argue that they are indeed part of the deep state and not even the TPLF. But I think, I don't want to get into all these, controversial issues, but to say that the idea of a deep state led by TPLF, which is still fighting back, I think is quite spurious in my view.
I think the second bit, Rashid, of the question that actually somebody had asked before, and I don't think you have answered, was the next generation of the TPLF leadership. I know we don't have a crystal ball to look at what we're going to do, but from, I guess, history and what we know, just an analysis is, do you think that they intend to fight or would they return to politics?
I love that question because, TPLF has been in power for 30 years. The old historical core of the TPLF is gone, people like Mele Zenawi. But I think you have probably still people who have been in combat, people like Debretsion Gebremichael. But I think it is quite a valid question. You have a party that has been in power for 30 years, has become accustomed to a life of ease, has been softened up by power. So it is very unlikely that you will have the same tenacity and the same resilience that they used to have in the past. And I would even think that part of the military operation, how quick it was, clearly suggests that TPLF is not what it claimed it was. But I think we must be careful about that kind of analysis because there's a lot of uncertainty about it. TPLF still, first of all, it has the ethos and the tradition of actually a guerrilla insurgency, of an insurgency. Then you also have the bitterness which has been left by war and also a public that has galvanized around it because of the fact that they perceive themselves as targeted as an ethnicity and not simply Tigray. And I think in many ways, the public support for TPLF has actually grown much more than in the past. So this is an insurgency with a lot of mileage. We should not completely rule it out and dismiss it as no longer part of the equation.
Rita, I just wanted to ask about the Tigrayan conflict being the flashpoint, but there's conflict in other places in Ethiopia. And I just wondered maybe if you can just highlight a little bit of what is going on then around Ethiopia and if this many fronts are possibly opening, would really civil society in Ethiopia and maybe regionally or internationally, having the background of a civil society in Ethiopia, will they be able to mitigate or advocate for a cessation of hostilities, not only in Tigray?
I think my colleague Kebreab also mentioned that there are at least 113 different flashpoints that have happened in the last while, all over Ethiopia, that are ethnic-based conflicts. his analysis, based on his analysis of a deep state, is that many of these conflicts have been generated, etc., or facilitated by the TPLF. I think this is still an issue that really needs to be looked at more deeply, right? Because, you know, one of the key conflicts that happened, you know, just recently also was also about on the role of Addis Ababa, right? The Oromo discussion about Addis Ababa, Finfine, and, you know, Addis Ababa as a capital city, how is it to be grown and who is to manage it, etc. I cannot actually see that, you know, the TPLF would in any way really be interested in that sort of conflict, except as part of the government as it was then. But, you know, so you have something like that also that is happening because the dialogue that needs to happen about what Ethiopia should look like, et cetera, cannot be directed top down. So civil society could have a role in that sort of process, in the grassroots sort of process of bringing communities together and, you know, facilitating the work of the elders in terms of, you know, their relationship with the youth and so on and so forth. So there is that role, but that can only happen if what's happening is a dialogue that's looking at grievances, reconciliation, and is honestly looking at inclusiveness, which may not be happening when the dialogue is unity at all costs. The interpretation of unity at all costs, certainly from, you know, from some quarters in Ethiopia, would be assimilation. So that is a dangerous discussion. So civil society does have a role, but there has to be a dialogue that's going on. It cannot happen in a vacuum. So I hope that answers part of the question.
Thank you so much, Rita. We're steadily running out of time, but I'd like to bring you in, Kibreb, now just with a question that I sort of like you to answer as you wrap up. So there's a question here that talks that says, you know, we haven't talked at all about the prospect of returning to a path towards elections, this having been at the center of how the conflict escalated. What are the odds of coming to a genuine democratic process from here? With the TPLF out of the picture, should Prime Minister Abiy not have every reason to allow a free contest now? And Kibreb, I'd sort of like you to answer this and comment on any other questions that were sort of raised for you. Thank you.
Great. Let me start with two brief comments. Still, you know, one comment raised by Rashid, which says that TPLF do have large public support. This is still assumption. We need to have a public opinion and get it, because the government, on the other hand, claims that when the army was getting into the different parts of Tigray, it was getting high support. So still, it's going to be a contested matter. So I want to say that. The ethnic profiling aspect by no means is going to be acceptable. I mean, under the guise of highly ethnic organized party, but still, you know, the government by no means should, or in any way should, do an ethnic profiling, and even any organization as well. This is illegal, and this is not acceptable. So I really concur with the reports of the Human Rights Commission of Ethiopia. So definitely, this is a very wrong thing. So I want to do that. But with regards to civil societies, you know, after a long period of suppressive administration, now civil societies started to reorganize themselves. So the ones which are formed in a form of organization, like civil society organization, they are getting registered, re-registered, and trying to organize themselves so that they can be of strong importance. This is the period where we are, and I know several civil societies which got the opportunity, you know, after getting the legal amendment, they are working hard in getting registered and mobilizing people. So that needs to be understood. But something that needs to also be recognized is there are different political parties in Tigray region which are actually pushed out by TPLF, but which do have large support by the public. For example, the person who started or organized the TPLF itself, that person has organized one party, and he went to Tigray, and then there was a public support, but at the end, they organized youth, and then they evicted him from Tigray, and he's based now in Addis, and he is trying to mobilize. And there are other youth groups, other youth parties as well, which are operating still, which are thrown out by TPLF and then being operating and waiting for the right moment to jump in. So when you think about TPLF, by the way, while TPLF was in Addis, the parliament was 100% controlled by EPRDF, which TPLF is part of it. And then TPLF went to Tigray and it highly supported the immediate action for election. And after the election, TPLF won 98 or 99% of the seats in the parliament. Imagine the other parties which are thrown out of Tigray wanted to, they were told not to participate. So, you know, this is what has happened on the ground. So this needs to be seen very well. All in all, the way I see it is that this action of the government is a crackdown of a deep state and corruption. So this is something that will protect the state, Ethiopia, and its sovereignty as well, so that it can exist. Because the TPLF totally denied the existence of the federal government, and then the federal system was in great jeopardy. Then afterwards, now the federal system seems to be more stable than ever. But at the end, as I said earlier, you know, humanitarian corridors and protection of civilians and the existence of any form of ethnic profiling is illegal, and that needs to stop immediately. So I fully support that, yeah.
Europe, I still need you to answer this question, just very briefly, if you may, and I think I'll ask all panelists to give me a very brief answer to this. So are there prospects of returning to a pathway towards elections? Is there a possibility of a democratic process from this point on?
For me, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Totally. I totally agree with that. Because one, the country previously, because of COVID, was in a state of emergency. And there are large tens of countries which postponed their election. But, you know, Ethiopia is one of them. So it's not an evil to postpone an election because of a pandemic that's shaking the whole world. And that's highly affecting even the more civilized world. So election is not a nominal thing that you will do in a country like Ethiopia without gathering large number of crowds, because that's how we operate. So it's very important to have crowds and large number of people to get around. So now I will be expecting democratic election by June. If not, then I will assume that there is an interest from the government that it wants to override the election. But I will be expecting, because, you know, constitutionally, the constitutional body and the House of Federation and the House of People's Representatives boldly recognized that this election needs to be postponed because of the COVID impact. Mm-hmm. So if there is any way that this will be postponed any more than, you know, June, July, then it's going to be something that is going to be wrong in light with the constitution, in light with the decision of the most powerful organs in the country, the House of People's Representative and the House of Federation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Rita, I'd like to pose another question to you. Sorry, we have two other questions that I think would be important to answer, actually. So the first question is, looking ahead, if the provisional Tigray regional government is imposed in practice, to what extent will it be accepted by Tigray civil society or treated as an alien government?
That's a very tough question, because my thinking is much more aligned with Rashid's, is that whilst within Tigray, et cetera, there would have been, you know, maybe issues even with the TPLF, and certainly there were new political parties arising and, you know, kind of maybe, you know, starting to find their feet and starting to sort of act. I think the dynamics of the war changes that discussion quite deeply. And people integrate, whether we think that, the election was, you know, very much one-sided, et cetera, did vote. The other interesting thing is that the media blackout also made it very difficult, right, for people to see footage, et cetera, of the Tigray voting. Although some journalists did manage to get through, and some footage did make it out, and people voted within a COVID, taking into account COVID and taking in the spacing, et cetera, et cetera, showing quite clearly that people do not need to mass in crowds, and people, if prepared, can actually follow rules and be disciplined, right? So I think before this conflict, there probably was room for sort of discussions, et cetera, et cetera. Now I think that room is really narrowed because there's 40,000 Tigrayans who are in a refugee camp because of the military action overnight.
Thank you. Rashid, your thoughts on this question, also just to wrap up. So Abiy's vision for a unitary state seems to be based on continued centralization of state and power. But should a balkanization of Ethiopia take place, do you think truly decentral forms of federalism still have a chance? For example, confederalism. Rashid?
Yes, but if I may, I would like to answer the question of postponing the elections first. It sounds to me very ironic that you can cancel an election because of COVID, but then you can go to war and displace tens of thousands. So that tells to you that it isn't COVID that actually, you know, is the real reason why Abiy canceled the elections. I think there are other bigger dynamics at play. Clearly, we have a prime minister, I think, who has calculated that he runs the risk of losing. And I think one issue that hasn't been raised here during this discussion is Oromia. The last, I think, 2 years in particular, we have seen extraordinary security campaign in Oromia, which has displaced actually thousands as well. Inter-ethnic violence and hostilities have risen sharply in Oromia. We have seen massive crackdown on the opposition. The entire leadership of Oromia is now in jail. So this is not a prime minister who has created the context for actually free and fair elections. We are beginning to see the return of an old Ethiopia, an Ethiopia of law and order. Actually, the operation against Tigray was called Operation Law and Order. Nowhere in the world have we seen a law and order operation in which a government deploys tanks, missiles, and aeroplanes against its own citizens. So that, I think, is the reality. On the road ahead, I don't see any prospect for any democratization in Ethiopia anytime soon. That could happen, you know, along the line. I think you have a prime minister, first of all, who has lost any democratic instinct that he had. This is a prime minister who wants to, centralize power, who wants, you know, to control the country much more tightly. Will he succeed? Now, going back to Pauline, the question which you raised, the future of Ethiopia after Tigray looks to me very messy. I don't think there is any strong appetite for Ethiopia to return to some kind of a centralized state. I think just about 6 months ago, people in the south voted to create a new state, Sidama. And that tells to you that on the ground, in the countryside, there is a strong appetite for autonomy, for self-governance, whether it's ethnic-based or coalition of ethnicities. So Ethiopia cannot be reconstructed as a centralized imperial state. Ethiopia can only be governed as a democratic federal system. And I think that is the genius of people like Meles, who, despite all their flaws, I think realize that the only way in which Ethiopia can be held together is to have that federal system. And I think unraveled that system. Thank you.
Maybe Rashid said that there is no country in the world which used that level of armament to put law and order in the country. But I say that there is no regional state in the world which attacked its own army, which has been protecting it from the Eritrean invasion and stayed there for 20 years. So that's what I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you very much. Of course, as we can see, this conversation really can take a long while. And this just brings to fore the complexity of the conflict in Ethiopia and where Ethiopia is at the moment. I think what is not lost from this discussion is, you know, the deep power analysis that is needed and to really understand how change then happens in Ethiopia and what that change means, not only in Ethiopia, but also in the region as well. I think another thing that has come out quite concretely is that conflict will really not solve anything. And I think right now, maybe moving forward, is looking at a political settlement and looking at how this might look like and what then that might mean for Ethiopia as a country. Of course, the issues of misinformation with the media blackout, whoever has caused the communication cut, I think the impact is still the same, that there's no information coming out and that a conflict can go on for so long with very little information coming out of it. I think one thing that Rashid also raised that is of importance is looking at the inward expansion of the conflict as much as we look at what the regional implication would be. I think internally, as Ethiopia is constituted, it is something that, you know, really needs to be looked at. And what Rita also raised about, you know, unity at all costs, and I think this is what was touched on with the last question, is that viable and can Ethiopia go back to a centralized form of government? I'd like to thank you all very much for spending your afternoon with us. I'd like to say thank you very, very much for our panelists for joining us today. Thank you for spending time with us. To the participants, thank you very much for being part of this conversation. And as usual, this is a neutral space where we encourage more discussions and different perspectives to what is going on within the region. So without further ado, I hope you have a good afternoon. If you were here physically, I'd say come and have a cup of tea, but alas,